Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net. Check out The Projection Booth, Wednesdays on iTunes and ChristopherMedia.net. Christopher Media, let's make some noise. Christopher Media, let's make some noise. Welcome to Beer Nuts, a weekly excursion into the world of craft beer, brought to you by MichiganBeerGuide.com. And now, here are the Beer Nuts.
Beer Nuts number 6. I'm Chris. JR from MichiganBeerGuide.com.
Yeah, man.
Uncle Pete.
Hey, everybody.
Dugout.
How are you?
All right. So this episode, we're going over the pond. Across the pond. Mix my metaphors there. But, what are we doing this week, JR?
Belgium. We're going to Belgium.
Belgium.
Some of the greatest history and most coveted beers come from that little tiny country over there by France called Belgium.
Why?
I think there's some divine intervention from Trappist monks, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But as always, we start our show with the beer quote of the week. And this week's beer quote of the week is from Benjamin Franklin, and it is as follows. In wine there is wisdom. In beer there is freedom. In water there is bacteria.
So, oh, Benji.
Back in the day,
smart man.
Wine and beer, much more preferred than water and I argue that's the same.
I'd say it's right the now. Same today, sure.
So later, actually not too far from now, we're going to find out why that is relevant to today's show. But for now, we're just going to start the show by always inviting everybody to join us in a beer, because it's really, we're just a bunch of regular guys sitting around having a beer. You know, we're the beer nuts. We don't claim to be experts. There's people that know a lot more than us about beer, but there's people that are just being introduced to good beer.
But we have the microphones, so there.
Yeah, and what we really want to do is we want to introduce people and try to get them to explore new horizons and find better beers, because there's a lot more to life than fizzy yellow lagers. So, let's have a beer. We're going to start out tonight's show. Today's show.
Whenever you're listening. That's a great thing about podcasts.
Yeah, actually, it's morning show, right? We are going to start out with one of my favorite Belgian beers ever. It's called Duvel. It's a golden strong ale. It's strong. It's golden.
Apparently, it's so cool. Dugout's taking a picture of it.
It's got a very large, every beer. Healthy, strong, white, frothy head. And everybody listening, pour yourself a beer and let's do a toast.
Here's the Belgian beers.
Here's the Belgian beers. Belgian.
It's in the little short bottle.
Short and squat.
For those of you that drink the Red Stripes,
it is
that kind
little,
of bottle.
Little short, stubby bottle.
Very large.
Because most monks are kind of short and stubby, right?
White, foamy head.
You can't never see their hands. They're always inside.
Very crisp and clean, distinct Duvel yeast taste.
It's very good, man. It's very good.
It's delicious.
When I worked for macro beer companies in Las Vegas in the last decade, in a previous life, my distributor out in Las Vegas also sold this brand.
All right. So this is imported from a European country, right?
Correct.
All right.
Belgium.
Okay. So here is you could just see the attitude difference between the United States and Europe on the beer labeling. Confidence in every sip. All right. I'm sure there's many laws against doing that here if you try to do something like that.
No, go ahead and read the label for us, please. I'd love to hear that.
Confidence in every sipness. Many years ago, it's Duvel or Duvel?
Duvel.
Duvel boldly went there. Duvel boldly went where no other brewers had gone before. We invented our own category of golden ale. It takes confidence to stand out from the crowd. So thanks for doing your own thing by drinking our own thing.
Duvel. And Duvel, I might point out, I believe means devil.
Ah.
But you know what? It's a fantastic beer. And I was started to say that when I was in the beer business in Las Vegas, my distributor that sold Newcastle Brown Ale and Heineken for me Newcastle Brown Ale sold Duvel, and every time I was on a sales call with somebody and we go into a bar that had Duvel, I would find a way to get them to order me one, because I'm only supposed to be drinking Newcastle Brown Ale, but this beer was always one of my favorites, and it still is, so enjoy. So let's dive into a little bit of the early history of Belgian brewing. There's so many stories, so many styles, so much history relevant to craft beer that relates to Belgium that we really can't do it justice in one show. We should really have one show about Trappist beers,
like a two-parter,
triples. But you know, this is episode number 6, right? In any event, we are in our infancy, so we're going to just generally cover all the Belgium styles, some more than others, and we can revisit them down the road because it really is one of the great areas of the birth of great beers. So, one thing I wanted to point out is in the early history during the Middle Ages, Trappist monks brewed for themselves and later to support their monasteries. So, monks are in the monasteries. And in 1664, a religious rebellion occurred to restore the original rules of the Roman Catholic Cistercian order. And the Order of Cistercians, tongue twister there, of strict observance was founded. They were also known as the Trappists. So the Trappists really were, they abstained from meat and embraced farming and brewing back in those days. So that's how monks started brewing. They were farmers and brewers. In those days, water was contaminated, and that goes back to our quote of the week.
Anyway.
It was much safer to drink a beer that was brewed by the monks than it was to drink the water back then.
If you're going to take a vow of celibacy, at least you can get drunk, right?
So that's why they brewed beer for themselves, so they could stay healthy and not get sick from the contaminated water.
However you want to frame it, monks.
So later on, after they brewed it for themselves, they decided everybody liked the beer, so they would support they brew it to support their monasteries and for charity, which still goes on today. Unlike Germany, there are no laws restricting the ingredients. There were a lot of wealthy, wealthy people in Belgium back in the day, and they were not that far from Germany. But wealthy people get what they want, and they just decided, we don't have anybody to tell us what, you know. Germans can brew with their Reinheitsgebot, but we're going to add other stuff to our beer and drink it and like it.
Then give it away.
So they were kind of like, you know, we're going to blaze our own trail, do our own thing, and they discovered all kinds of awesome different ways to make beer because they weren't restricted by these, like, archaic or strict laws of brewing. So, the next thing I want to talk about is the difference between Trappist and Abbey ales. Trappist ales are brewed by monks. The profits from Trappist ales go to church and for church charities. And actually, in Belgium, there are 6 Trappist breweries designated. To be a Trappist beer, you must meet 4 criteria. The brewery must be within the monastery and brewed by monks or their supervision. Number 2, brewing should never be the monk's primary focus. They're a monk first. They answer to God before they are a brewer. Brewing income should always cover the monk's living expenses, maintenance of the monastery, and its grounds. Any profits beyond breaking even must go be donated to charity as the will of the church. And finally, number 4, to ensure impeccable quality standards, the Trappist beers must be monitored constantly by the International Trappist Association to maintain the integrity of the quality of these brands. Now, Abbey ales, in contrast, are basically fake Trappist ales. They don't adhere to all those qualities, but they're brewed by a commercial brewer. Many times they're under license from a church or a monastery using those brewing guidelines, but they're cutting corners. They're not actually, the monks aren't brewing the beer. They have, you know, like commercial people doing everything under the guidance of a monastery. So it's kind of like they're still trying to be pretty good quality and make the beer the same way, but they are not brewed by the monks. So it's kind of like, you know, they're copying. Now, because of this, in, I believe, 1999, the Union of Belgian Brewers introduced the Certified Belgian Abbey Beer Trademark. Now, what that is, it was a way to, there were so many marketing people trying to market their brands as Abbey Beers, they stepped in and they said, wait, to be a real, official, registered Abbey Beer, and use that our logo on your bottles and your labels, you have to pay royalties to the Abbey or the Order, and the funds must be used to support the Order's charitable activities or the cultural preservation of the Abbey. So now they have a registered Abbey Ale designation. Now, there are still Abbey Ales that are out there that don't have that designation, but if you have it, I guess you're like a step ahead. So basically, that's the difference between Trappist and Abbey Ales. It has nothing to do with the style. It has to do with who they brew for and how they brew it.
So John, this Duvel we're having, is that a Trappist or an Abbey?
Duvel is an Abbey Ale. It is not part of the Trappist. There's only six elite. There are actually 10.
Duvel says we want the money.
Later on in our broadcast, we will list each and every one of those 10 coveted Trappist ale breweries. But Duvel, despite being a very highly respected and high-quality brewery, which I tend to back a lot, they are not a Trappist brewery. So to answer your question,
yep,
no, they're
just
not
wanted Trappist. To clarify. What yep. are we? What
can
are we
I
having?
Just say something about the Monks?
Please do.
Yeah, they have whack haircuts, but they sure can make good beer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They do what they do. So we are going to go into some of the styles now, and I'm going to turn it over to Doug to start with the singles. Actually, you know what, Doug? Let me hold off. I'm gonna save you for the Belgian Dark Strong Ales because those are your favorites.
Okay.
I'm going to continue because...
He wants to hear the passion.
I learned a few things when I was researching for the show, and I want to share those with people, and I don't know if Doug would know some of this stuff. He may. But anyway, so we're going to start. Okay. There's singles, doubles, and triples, or blondes, doubles, and triples. But the single blonde style is really a style that kind of died, barely exists, and now exists almost falsely. I'm going to explain this a little bit clearer.
No one likes single blondes?
Let's make this
Everybody
clear.
Likes oh, single man. Blondes.
Who doesn't like a single blonde?
Well, the blonde style ale from Belgium was brewed in the early 19th century, and here's why it died out. It was a low ABV of 3% alcohol or less. So, I mean...
Isn't that like a Bud Light?
That makes an Amstel Light look like a barley wine.
It's a marathon beer, not a sprinter.
So, originally, this beer was called Enkel, which means single. It was a basic no-frills recipe of a monastery typically reserved for monks, abbey guests, and the needy. It was given away, you know? Have a drink on me.
Yeah.
These were phased out over time as demand for them diminished and stronger beers prevailed. So, basically, everybody's like, I don't want... 3% little tiny, but they have their place in history, and that's how the single, and it's relevant because the amount of grain needed to provide that beer was pretty small. But if you double that, then you become a double, and that's the next designation. Before we move into doubles, though, I want to just say a little bit about blondes. The blonde designation now is typically used to identify a lighter beer. Usually the lightest beer in a Belgian brewery's portfolio that has a lower ABV in the 3 to 7% range. Example, West Vetleren, which is one of the most popular Trappists, serves their blonde only at the monastery. And Chimay Golden, which is 4.8%. Petit Orval, 3.5%. And West Mall Extra.
Keep the blondes to themselves, huh?
Which is only brewed twice a year and reserved for monks and abbey guests only to drink only during lunch.
Lunch? So
these are like low alcohol beers that you're supposed to be able to just...
The marathon beers, not the sprinters.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they are. So, that being said, there's a reason they're extinct because there's very little demand for them. Although, to honor the history and tradition of them, some of the traditional breweries do still have them. And as West Mall does, they only serve them during lunch. But there is a place in history for them and you need to know about them. Moving on to a much more popular style... The double. And before we move on, let's taste a double.
I'm all for that.
Hey, you know, looks like the cat is a fan, by
okay,
the way.
Okay, here we go.
Well, the cat loves
She's been hanging out in here for both shows.
This is like a job, opening this double, because this is a Trappist. This is one of the six Trappist ales, Trappist breweries in Belgium, called La Trappe.
Oh, La Trappe.
And... Doug, I'm going to ask you to open that. This particular bottle that we're opening is a 750 milliliter. Oh, that was great.
That was beautiful.
It comes in a cork and a cage because
of that. There's a lot of pressure in that bottle.
The dugout is pouring me that one. It's a big bottle. So we filled. Oh, wow. Look at that carbonation.
That's a lot of head, man.
Whoa. I guess I should have done that at an angle, but okay. So, we are now having a La Trappe Trappist Double. So the double style, again, we talked about that, the Enkel, which was the original single style that didn't use very much grain because it, the more grain you have, the more sugars will be converted into alcohol and the stronger the beer will be. So there was very little grain in the ankle, but a double had twice the grain of an ankle. It's got malty sweetness. It's usually reddish to dark brown. Flavors of herbs, plums, bananas, apples, spice, pepper, burnt sugar, raisins, chocolate, caramel are typical of a double. So, typical commercial examples are the West Mall Double, Chimay Red, West Fettler and 8, and the beer we're tasting now, the La Trappe Double. So everybody take a sip, and for those of you out there, I'm not sure if you have this particular beer, but whatever you're drinking, drink with us, because that's what it's all about. We're here to just enjoy drinking beer together. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
I really like this style. Darker, it's got a little bit of sweetness to it.
Yeah, I'm a fan of these types of beers usually.
It's got the, you can taste the raisins, the caramel, the pepper.
Banana.
It has it has a beautiful balance to it. As we heard that bottle explode, there's a good amount of carbonation in it, but it's the head is very smooth, very drinkable.
Wow, that's good.
What do you think, Uncle Pete?
I love it. I mean, it's got a great aroma. I get some banana in there and kind of a slight bubblegum flavor. It's sweet. It's very refreshing. I like it very much.
What I like about it, I love dark fruits. I love bready. It's bready. It's got like some dark fruits, some figs, raisins, plums, and a little bit of caramel. And it does have that bubblegummy, clovey, you know, a little bit kind of like almost a German yeast.
It's spice, but it's not obvious spice.
No.
Like, you know,
it's not
previous like, episode we had done some purposely spiced beers. This is actual
the spice
esters
is,
that you're getting.
I'm
out
learning
of the
that
yeast.
That the darker beers, and I think that's I think I'm learning this is a feature of them. They don't bite back. They just sit in your mouth, and you can sit and you can taste them after you've drank it.
Doug was on the right path. I mean, the spices come from the yeast. It's not like you threw, like, you know, spices in there separately. The yeast generates these flavors, and it's just fantastic.
Like, the darker beers, they seem to just let it sit in your mouth. Like, it doesn't, there's no, like, you could taste it in your mouth rather than having to taste it through the aftertaste, if that makes any sense. That's it, you know, from the newbie standpoint.
I've never had this beer before, and it's delicious.
Yeah, this is good.
This is going to be one of those ones we're going to pass around again.
Got a nice darker color.
Okay.
It's unfiltered.
I might add it's also in a large bottle. So, what's the ABV on that, Doug?
7% right here. I'm on the page. Yep. Serve it.
Doubles.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, doubles usually have about a 6 to 8%. It's lovely.
Nice thing about these two, you know, they're not hopped up really, you know, high bitterness or anything. They're probably using, you know, European hops, of course, and they're not normally considered, highly acidic.
These have been made the same way for a very, very long time.
Centuries and centuries, yeah.
Later on, actually, Pete, I'm going to ask you to go over the ingredients, but you're absolutely hit the nail on the head. The hop profile of these are like background hops. They're not supposed to steal
That's
the
right.
show. They're supposed to be like supportive, lower, milder hops, that noble hops from the German and French region.
Right, as compared to some of the pale ales we've had where the hops just stand right out. I mean, these are in the background.
I think this would go great with a big old steak.
I could handle that.
That's is a Outback delivery?
Not yet.
Okay.
Give the internet a couple more years.
You know what?
Everyone will deliver.
I want to move on to triples, but I got a full glass of this. I mean, can we talk more about it? I mean, I don't know what more we can say. It's just I really get a lot of raisins, dark fruit, chocolate, caramel. Maybe
It's an unfiltered, right? I mean, it's a darker color. It's very much copper, amber. It's not a light blonde.
Carbonation.
So this is a double, and we're saying that is double ingredients,
double
right?
Double grain. The ankle, which was the original low ABV beer, which is the reason single/blonde is not a prevalent style.
Oh my God.
Most of the Belgians I've poured recently, too, have been very, frothy and high on the head. Like this one, I know the first glass you just got, John. Very frothy and a lot of carbonation coming out.
That's why I had to get a refill, because 90% of my first glass was foam. I took the first hit, and it was like drinking a bottle of champagne right after it's popped. But you heard the pop. I mean, there was a lot of the Belgian beers do have a very healthy carbonation. Their yeasts are
Is bottle conditioned, right? It fermented in the bottle with that cork in there.
And I might, as we're talking about bottle conditioning, when you have a bottle conditioned beer, there are yeast sediment at the bottom of the bottle. So when you drink a Belgian beer, unless you really like the the taste of yeast, which isn't terrible, but isn't probably preferred. You should probably pour all but the last half to a quarter of an inch and then let the yeast, because the yeast settles in the bottom.
Try to pour with some sensitivity.
Now,
right?
I do have friends that love that. And you plenty know, of when the bottle's empty, they pour it in and drink it down. But
plenty of vitamin B12 in that yeast.
And it's a natural laxative. Did anybody tell you that?
You just did.
Bada bing.
They had to go there.
Sorry.
Well, I really need to move on to the triples, but it's tough to do.
It's hard to leave the doubles.
But we will move on.
Well, soldier, hey, the pumpkin ale or the pumpkin beer episode proved we will soldier on.
Absolutely. Well, with better results here.
So far, we're off to a much better start than the pumpkin beer episode because I'm actually enjoying this immensely.
So I can talk about the triple while we're waiting for
please do.
You to sip these beers out because these are not chugging type of beers. But a triple, is much like the double, is triple the grain. Again, a malty sweetness. And it's a red to dark brown. Or no, sorry. It's a... they're generally pale in color as opposed to the doubles, which are dark brown, which is sort of unsuspecting in a way. I mean, you would think that, say, a beer that's going to be triple is going to be even darker and bolder, and that's not
the case. Yeah, one of the things that confused me when I started studying Belgian beers is you got, like, the blonde and then double. You would think, okay, it would go from lighter to darker is normally the progression. But actually, single is blonde, double is dark, triple is yellow, and then you go to a quad, which is dark again. So it's like every other one. I mean, they really fuck with you.
Yeah.
We're allowed to swear on podcast.
Oh, absolutely.
Another characteristic of it is it's got a large, frothy white head. Very different from, say, the double we were drinking. It's got a frothy head, but not quite like this. It leaves a strong lacing on the glass as you drink it. It's usually spicy, floral, just a touch sweet with the malt. It's like the single and the double, you know, low to moderate hops. But being in line with, say, the double over the single, the triple is obviously it has a higher ABV to it as well.
You know, what's good about the triples is they sneak up on you, and they're very similar to a golden strong ale. They sneak up on you in that they're like 10% alcohol, and you would never know. Because you get this golden beer, it looks like a Budweiser or something, and then you taste it, and it's nothing like a Budweiser. And you think, oh, it's golden, it's not that strong. And it's like, these are like 7 to 10%. Most of them are 9, 10%. Thanks
for the time. Oh, there's not a lot of songs that deal with threes or triples.
Oh, man, no. Give me three steps.
Now that the double is
finally gone. Oh, there you go, Uncle Pete.
Now that the double is finally gone, we are going to... Whose glass is empty? Is anybody's glass empty?
Still savoring.
Give me a second.
It's getting tough.
It's for this reason that I bring two glasses.
Ah, very good. I'm going to have to do that.
Thinking ahead.
It's because I'm drinking the end of the double now. And you can't chug the double, man. It's too good. It's like those guys on like Facebook that are just chugging stuff. You ever see that? Some of those beer stuff?
Never saw one, no.
Yeah.
Chugging out of a bomber? No, I don't know anybody that does that.
But these beers are meant to be savored.
Back in the day, I could bong the hell out of a beer. But
and
that's
I
when
could,
you're 20 something.
I could too, and that's when I was like half this age, and I could also drink like a crappy American Bud Light or something. I didn't say that.
Or a pumpkin ale.
There you did.
Bud Light!
Pumpkin.
Of course, Light!
Ripping on the pumpkins like they have no feelings at all. All
right. All right, we're moving on.
Drives them out
of
their
here's
gourd.
The triple. Okay, the triple that we are sampling now. One of my favorites, St. Bernardus Triple.
St. Bernard.
Now, here's an interesting
I think of
story
dogs.
About the St. Bernardus Brewery. We've been talking about Trappist versus Abbey beers. The St. Bernardus Brewery actually licensed under one of the Trappist breweries to be able to brew. And West Bettleren is located in St. Sixtus, and they, until 1992... marketed beers as St. Sixtus beers under authority of that brewery. Well, that expired and that ran the gamut. So now they are St. Bernardus. But honestly, all their products are stellar.
That guy looks pretty happy on this label.
They make a ABT-12 is one of my favorites. They're St. Bernardus.
Well, you'd be happy if you could.
But technically, it's an Abbey. It's not a Trappist.
Yeah, no, right?
The quality of their beers is very high, and it's a desired product.
Is that why they're
for? And you know what? When you look at the
tight
bottle,
with the product,
you see.
Was that a 10-ounce bottle?
It's either an 11.2 or a 12-ounce bottle. But what I want to say is there's a picture of a monk holding a goblet of this beer.
Do you think that bottle could fill that goblet? Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But I'm sure they make larger
sizes.
There's
no rule against opening more than one beer to fill a glass.
You know.
But what I want to say about St. Bernardus is they are not a Trappist-designated brewery, but all their stuff's phenomenal. It's good. And I know they've done whatever they've done with marketing and stuff, and they're not a true Trappist. But it's just the testimony that there are great, great Belgian beers out there that aren't necessarily Trappist. Just because monks don't make it doesn't mean they can't teach other people how to make it just as good. So, and I'm not being paid in any way by St. Bernardus, but man, a case would be really nice if you just my way. Tweet me out. I'll give you my home address.
I'm sure they're getting right on.
But there. I really do love their beers. There's all of them. Everything I've ever had from St. Bernardus has been stellar. So, and their triple notwithstanding. So, what do you guys think?
I think it rocks. I think as advertised.
Can we quote you?
You can quote
Dugout.
You can quote the Dugout saying that
Dash, it rocks. Quote, rocks. Unquote.
It does rock. I mean, taste it. I mean, you got that spicy pepper.
Definitely.
You got a little clove, a little banana clove going on, almost like a Hefeweizen, but more like a Belgian.
I think it's much more balanced than the double we just had. You know, it's evened out on all those components that you're speaking of, where I think the double we just had a lot more stuck out individually, so...
And deceptively strong. I mean, you're not really getting any kind of a burn off the
alcohol.
That's
what's great about triples. Triples are like 10% alcohol. And again, you drink one and you're like, this is nothing. You look at this yellow beer with a big head on it and you don't think it's, but it'll sneak up on you.
Sometimes that's a bad thing. Yeah.
Sometimes it's a bad thing, but you know what? But what's good is that you don't notice the alcohol, because if you have a beer that you notice just an alcohol burn, it's not always good. So it's a lovely beer, and I'm glad everybody's enjoying it, because I enjoy it too. So,
Well, as I say, I'm going to file this one under.
So?
Yeah. I'm still developing my craft beer palate. It's got the kind of flavor on it that I'm not a huge fan of.
And I think also in a tasting way, I know they go up the scale into a single, double, triple, but
mm-hmm.
I almost would have a triple before a double because of the double has a big explosion of flavor. This is a little more compact and delicate.
And generally, you go from lighter to darker when you taste beers. And again, the Belgians fuck with us. They they have.
But I've always been a fan of the darker beers.
And then the double's dark, then the triple's light, and then the quad is dark again. So they just do their own thing, and it's okay. Again, they were very wealthy back in the day, and they're like, we don't have any.
We're Belgian. We don't give a shit.
Whatever the hell we want. We don't have to go. No Reinheitsgebot in our country. So now we are finally to the Belgian Dark Strong Ale, and I am going to turn it over to Doug.
Okay. The Belgian Dark Strongs use roasted malt, which gives it a darker color, unlike the triple we just had. It was very light. And a very toasty flavor to it. And if you think of darkness of malts or the roastedness of malts, it compares quite a bit with coffee. So if you have a darker roasted coffee, it's got more of a burnt flavor, and it's a bolder flavor. The same is true with roasted malts and beer. You know, they're typically a deep amber to a dark brown. They have a dense foamy head. They're rich, sweet, toasted, bready. You get some pepper and some caramel, herbal with dark fruits, something like prunes, raisins, plums, figs. They're typically a pretty high ABV beer. They run from 8% to 11%.
We're just working our way right up the ladder here, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Singles,
man.
Doubles, triples, quadruples.
Up and up and up.
Well, those monks seem to know what they're doing. I mean, they just, I'm sure over the centuries tweaking with the recipes and the ingredients that they have on hand locally. You know, and I think that the agricultural you know, culture that they're supportive of, and then helping to fund their own livelihood, as well as donating to charitable causes and taking care of the community. You know, it's good that they have a selection of beers, because, you know, not everybody likes just one kind.
And,
so.
And why shouldn't they be phenomenal? You think of the discipline it takes to be a monk. I'm sure that carries through into the brewing process.
Absolutely.
And all of us as homebrewers know that, you know, it takes some discipline to do things the right way,
right,
in consistent ways, and get the same results every time and be excellent at it.
I have to check my geography a little bit about Belgium, you know. Like you said, I know it's near France, right? It's on the border.
It's a northern European country.
Northern, yeah, European.
Between, ocean touches Belgium.
Between border Germany and France, right?
On the border with Netherlands.
And the Netherlands.
Denmark.
Yep.
That so general area.
The reason I bring that up is I'm curious to know, you know, local ingredients and stuff like that. You know, what kind of environment there is for growing the barleys and the wheats and the hops and stuff.
All right, guys. We're about to try one of my favorites. This is another Trappist brewery called Rochefort. And it is their Rochefort number 8 now.
Rochefort, not to be confused with Roquefort.
Like, you know, I'm not even
the
sure.
Blue cheese.
Yeah.
Is it Rochefort or Roquefort? I don't even know these.
Well, Roquefort is blue cheese dressing.
It's Roquefort.
Roquefort? Is that the correct pronunciation?
I don't
so,
know.
So, my bad, but I've had a few beers. I don't know the pronunciation.
You have to put the emphasis on the right syllable.
I drank this beer for years. It's one of my all-time favorites. It's the number 8. And it's funny that some of them have different breweries have different ways of, you know, some of them are single, double, triple. Some of them say start dark, strong ale on the label. Well, some of them have just numbers, and you have to look up what the number means. Well, number 8, the Roquefort, or Roquefort, however it's supposed to be pronounced, is one of the legendary Trappist beers, and it is one of the best dark strong ales I've ever had. So let's all taste our Roquefort. It strikes you almost as a stronger double, which is really what it is. Another lot of raisins, figs.
That's nice right there.
I mean, I love this beer.
It just gets sweeter and sweeter as I go up the scale here.
It's the sweetness. Getting close to bread in a bottle time pretty
right.
soon.
Pumpernickel bread.
I know, I just think I'd...
I mean,
I'm learning that I prefer dark beers.
Okay, this is why Trappist beers are Trappist beers. I mean, these monks have been brewing beers a long time, and that's their life. Even though they're monks first and brewers second, they got it going on. They got a little help, a little divine intervention from up above. This is a fantastic beer. This is so far the best beer that I've had tonight. Would you not agree, guys?
Oh, we're giving away your hint.
Tonight?
Tonight?
During this episode.
This episode, yes.
Well, carbonated.
Raisins,
nice color.
Everything you want and then some.
Great roasted nose on it.
So, you know, I'd really love for some of our listeners to send us... I'll tell you what. The first listener that sends me a picture, send a Twitter to @MichiganBeerGuy with a picture of you with a Rochefort 8. And we'll have a present going out to you.
Oh, present. And
we'll
prizes.
Have a Michigan Beer Guy glass and a mystery prize.
Something you can enjoy your Roquefort 8.
You're not allowed to send beer through the mail, so I can't do that legally, but it's kind of like the...
Leave it at that.
But you never know what you might get. So if you don't work for the BATF, tweet us out. Okay, so where are we at here, guys?
I think we're on the...
are we down to Belgian Golden Strong Ales?
Well,
yes.
Yeah, or
quad.
Did we talk...
We already talked
much about a quad. It's not actually
quad.
A type of...
Yep.
There's one more.
Officially recognized style, but...
actually,
and it's actually a type of dark strong ale.
Yes, that's what I was going to say, Doug.
I don't believe it would follow in line and be... four times the grain of...
You know what? When I was doing research for this, I was surprised. I figured it was, you know, single, double, triple, quad. But quadruple is a type of Belgian dark strong ale, as Doug said. It's not a real BJCP, which is Beer Judge Certification Pro.
So it's sort of like saying it goes to 11... even though no knobs really go to 11.
Yeah,
they go to 10.
Pulling that out.
So a quad is a Belgian dark strong ale, but all Belgian dark strong ales are not quads. Does that make sense? It's a category within a category.
The quads That's are, pretty meta.
It's not a real style, but it's very popular, and I like them a lot. And they are very high in alcohol, 10 to 11% usually, typically very malty with a lot of dark fruits, just like the dark strong ale is only really stronger.
Yeah, a lot of American craft brewers have taken to brewing that style.
Right. I mean, we tend to use the words imperial, right, for the high-end, high-gravity, alcohol-heavy beers, right? Imperial pale ales, imperial stouts, imperial porters. Here, this is like an imperial Trappist or an imperial Belgian.
Well, we do have other styles to go over. I think we have a quad to drink tonight, but it's going to be a legendary quad that's very hard to find. It's going to be our whale.
It's coming later in the show.
So we're going to kind of keep you in suspense until...
The whale of the week. We're teasing it.
It's the whale of the week, baby. The W-O-W.
It's hard to find.
You know what? #WOW.
Oh, on Twitter, that could be a lot.
If you Twitter at Michigan Beer Guy.
Be a lot of video game
pound
references.
#WOW. You never know what might happen.
Hey, do #WOW and also hashtag beer nuts. So that way we'll get it.
There you go.
Because you do #WOW, you get a lot of video game tweets.
If you can follow all of those instructions, something good might show up in your mailbox.
I'll bet something good will show up.
I'm sure it will.
It's like when they used to have the lady in the cakes at bachelor parties like 70 years ago.
Bada bing.
So we're going to talk a little bit about Belgian Golden Strong Ales, or it's a strong blonde ale, or as Pete was mentioning before, an imperial blonde ale.
That's strong blonde upstairs.
And actually, in our current craft beer speak.
We started the show off with a Duvel, which is my favorite Golden Strong Ale.
So it's very similar to a triple.
The devil.
But uses less grain. So, of course, with less grain, it's going to be less sweet. But one of the main differences is that this beer is actually hopped up more. So you're going to have a lot more bitterness to it. It's going to be bright yellow to golden, a lot lighter in color than a triple would be. The high carbonation results in a very large, frothy head. You got to be careful when you pour it. You don't want to pour straight down into the glass. You want to angle it off. Otherwise, it's an overflow waiting to happen in your glass. It's typically floral, perfumey, and herbal, and that's due to the European hops that are used in the beer. And it's also fruity and spicy, and that's attributed to the yeast. And Belgian yeast is very unique in that it's got quite a few different esters going on with it, which are flavors that come out in it. Very typically would be banana would be one of them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So we also want to talk, we're going to touch on some other styles that you probably won't taste tonight, but we want you to know about them. The Saisons are the farmhouse ales that are usually brewed at the end of the spring and into the summer at higher temperatures. Saison means season, so it's the seasonal brew. It's originated in the farmland of northern Belgium and northern France. Traditionally, in the old days, they were brewed using surplus grain for the seasonal workers that worked the fields, and they actually took the spent grain from these batches and fed them to their livestock. So that's why they're farmhouse ales. I mean, it was all about being on the farm. And they're lighter and a very popular style. Saisons, there's also fruity saisons, but that's more of a summer thing. Wit beers, or white beers, or beer blanche, as the French would say, brewed with unmalted wheat, coriander, and orange peel. They're refreshing, tart, light in body, citrusy, spicy, moderate ABV of 4.5 to 5.5. Kind of the same. Kind of a warm weather beer. Examples are Hoegaarden and Blue Moon would be like our domestic.
Oh, example. You gave up the commercial examples.
I did.
It's the white beer. It's obviously
well, it's
got to
be the white beer
that's taken off with American palates.
Yeah.
It's been very popular for quite a while now.
Look, but you know what? When I go to like Buffalo Wild Wings, I'll get a Blue Moon because that's the closest thing. I don't know, like. I tried to ask for a Goose Island this past week at a Buffalo Wild Wings. They said they don't have it. I said, well, it's on your fucking menu. But
hold them to it.
Lame.
Yeah.
You know what? It is what it is. It's not something I would order, but people enjoy these beers. There's nothing wrong. I mean, it's okay. Some of our listeners might say, I love Blue Moon. That's okay. Hey, it's a lot better than a Butter or Bud Light, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I get it, because it's like the best thing I can get.
I mean, and you know, my credit to Coors and you know, for finding and even AB for having Shock Top, they're at least branching out and putting something other than a boring yellow fizzy.
Well, and that's a style that started in the early craft explosion in the U.S. I mean,
I agree.
Back
it's easy
in the
to
80s.
Drink for anybody. I mean, and, you know, and then you also
it's
get
very
people.
Accessible.
I mean, you'll get a lot of people that'll say, oh, I can't believe you drink fruit with your beer, and you know. And there's two sides of that.
Hey, squeezing that orange into the Blue Moon
you
helps it out,
man. You know what? If that's how you enjoy a beer, God bless you. You know, if that's what makes, you know, I'll accept that a lot easier than I will a lime and a Corona, which is like Dutch horse piss, but
oh,
I guess Mexican horse piss.
But. Shots fired. Yeah. South of the border.
I'm in trouble now, but you know what? You know, no.
So
I
much mean, for that Corona sponsorship.
I'm not losing
I don't think
any
that,
sleep over that.
I doubt that was coming anyways.
No, thank you. I only
but
drink
just
beer.
In case it was, you killed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, can't be everything to everyone.
Exactly.
No, but actually, you know, the wit beer is an easy-to-drink style. You know, it's good for a beginner craft beer drinker, and a lot of ladies like it. It's easy to drink, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's okay.
Well, you're talking enjoy the subtext in that last contract.
Man, I know so many women beer drinkers that love, like, imperial stouts and stuff. There's no gender problem with the craft beer. I mean, I know women.
No, there are women
that blow me, my taste.
My girlfriend upstairs is a beer drinker, and she does not drink fizzy yellow lager. Like, the closest she gets is, like, Sam Adams Summer Ale. But no, she is a beer drinker.
Bring her down here. Let's go. Let's expand her horizons.
Yeah.
We got a little bit of trap left here.
But I missed a joke, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. We couldn't go there.
No, can't go there.
Gotcha.
You'll check, edit.
Check a little bit before 15959.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
All right. Well.
So I'm curious about the wit beer, though. You said it's made with unmalted wheat. And, you know, from my knowledge, I thought you had to have malted grain, meaning it's, you know, partially germinated and then it's oven baked a little bit to get the caramelization of the, you know, and get the sugars going. But if it's unmalted grain, how are you going to get the character and the alcohol going out of that? Curious. I'm just thinking out loud.
Me too.
Is that hypothetical?
Maybe there's other grains.
Question that none of us has an answer for.
I think there's other grains probably in the recipe. It's just an addition, the unmalted wheat, I would think.
I'll have to refer to the source that I got this information.
Yeah, let's study up on that one. Okay.
All right.
Sorry to stump the...
Cut that out,
stump
too.
Stump the host.
All right. Everybody take a deep breath, take a chug, and let's...
Here we go, yeah.
Not cutting stuff.
Nothing's going to show up in my mailbox now.
To the lambics.
We didn't bring a lambic, did we?
No.
It's always a beer graveyard whenever we record any of these, especially by the end of the second show.
No, nobody can see this, but there are just bottles all over the table.
This and the Westie, is it?
The Westie's down there somewhere. I thought I saw it.
It is. It's here. But this is what we have to open now, then.
You know, your bag was heavy, so...
Well, it's not anymore.
Yes, we did a good job.
Just melted ice.
Okay, all right, so
the Grand Reserve. What's the Grand Reserve?
I've seen this name before.
What style is the Grand Reserve?
That's Belgian style.
And then here we'll cut in here because I got a few more styles to go through.
Well, we got Lambic Flanders.
Yeah, Lambic and Flanders. And I'll just go through this real quick. We can edit this other stuff out. But all right, here we go.
Hold on, I got Chimay Blueprint.
That's what I got too.
All right.
Belgian Strong Dark Ale. Really?
Belgian Strong Dark Ale. Mm.
It's got a 95.
Okay. So a couple more styles of Belgian beers that I think people are kind of familiar with, at least, you know, they do have distribution in the U.S. or lambics. They're typically dry, sour, and sort of funky. A lot of fruit added into it. You know, as John was saying earlier, there's no Reinheitsgebot in Belgium, so anything's game. So you'll find cherries, raspberries. I've even seen banana lambics.
No, to refresh the listeners, the Reinheitsgebot, was it four ingredients?
The German law of 1516.
Right. German law, you can only use
water,
malted barley, water, yeast, and hops.
Yeah.
So, but you go to Belgium and they're like,
Belgium says
screw you.
Do
whatever we want.
five, six, seven, eight ingredients.
And one thing you'll notice about Belgian beer labels is they're not normal. There'll be a lot of cartoon characters. There'll be a lot of mythological characters on them. You see little elves running around. They have a lot of fun.
They don't take their tux, too.
They border the Netherlands, labels. You know, and you got the marijuana thing in the Netherlands, you know. Maybe they cross the borders, design the labels.
They're a little
crazy.
They take what's inside the bottle seriously, but the labels they put on side, they don't take themselves too seriously.
Yeah.
There's another style, and this is one that's true to my art, and this is a Flanders Red. It's a sour beer, which are becoming very popular right now in the craft.
Oh, I've
beer
heard
world.
About this style.
But Flanders Red is typically it's a deep red beer. There's berry plum flavors. It's quite acidic, and they are typically oak barrel aged. And then there's another style called Ode Bruin, which is a little more maltier than the reds, with plums, figs, red berries. I'm going to give a shout out to a local brewery in our neighborhood here named Kunin, and they make a phenomenal Ode Bruin. It's a cherry Ode Bruin. They use Michigan cherries in it.
I just had one yesterday.
I went to their release last week.
Yeah, we popped the top on one of those yesterday, and it was fabulous. Sure. Michigan cherries, fresh from the tree, and just a little bit of sourness in there.
I can tell you the smell. Initially, I'd taken aback, but I've learned doing this show that the smell and the taste don't often match up.
This one's very yeasty.
Sometimes it's more powerful than it comes across,
and
vice versa.
The beer that we just poured, just to be frank, it's not a Flanders Red. It is another Belgian dark strong ale, but it is one of the most popular and beloved brands. It's Chimay Blue Label,
and this is rather new. It's a 2014. And I was reading on the bottle where it said the date is actually stamped on the cork.
Oh, nice. Well, you might have heard me pop the cork, but I couldn't wait. My beer was empty.
So these wonderful. These age well, I guess, huh? These Belgian beers. They're good
sure.
for aging.
In general, beers of stronger alcohol content will age longer and develop more complex characteristics.
Like
anything, it gets a peak and then it will decline after a certain point. But you could probably age a beer like this 5-10 years.
Sure.
And it'll only get better for a long period of time. And this is lovely.
I get a lot of yeast on the nose of this one.
Now, this is the first of the ones we've had where you can actually detect a booze burn on the front of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it seems to be at a bit of a warmer temperature than the ones we've had so far, too.
Oh, yeah, I purposely let this sit out so that it could warm up and you could get pretty much all the true flavor of the beer.
It's very flavorful, and as we've stated in previous episodes, when you allow a beer to warm up, it relaxes the beer and allows more flavors to come out, and it's no secret that...
After six shows with you guys, I can agree with that.
Coldness numbs the taste buds, so when your beer's too cold, you can't taste all the complexities of it.
But it depends on the style of the beer, too. I mean, if you know, certain styles lend themselves to being served
colder.
Nothing
like an ice cold Pilsner, right?
Exactly.
It already has no flavor, so.
Oh.
There you go.
He can tell I'm a big Pilsner fan, huh? But this is good. It's very, very complex.
So why don't we talk a little bit about the ingredients of Belgian beers for a few minutes?
Yes, Pete, as a brewer, I think you're qualified to do so. Please lead us into that.
All right, it sounds good. So let's start with the basics, right? So the malts themselves, the grains, the barleys that they use. And, you know, this is the stuff, the basis of the beers that provides the color and the flavor and, you know, the backbone of a beer. And most of the brewing ingredients in these Belgian style ales, you know, you'll have for your pails and your doubles and your triple styles, you'll have Pilsner malts. John was just talking about Pilsners. And they do, in fact, do add good flavor and color to the beer. Also, there's Munich malts, Cara Viennas, Cara Munichs and specialty and biscuit malts that provide flavors. So you hear these terms when we talk about biscuity and bready, you know, a lot of that's coming directly from the grain.
And the those different grains are roasted into different levels, so they add different colors into the beer as well.
Right. So in the malting process, as they take grain and it spends some time at different temperatures, right, and drying in the drying process, basically what that does when you're malting grain is it halts the germination process of the grain itself. And if you do that at different points in time and then allow it to, you know, pull out the components of the grain itself, the grain husk and the grain kernel, you're gonna free up a lot of the components that are able to be fermented in the batch.
And I might add that Special B and biscuit malts, those are known as specialty malts. Very small quantities are needed of those. If you put too much in there, it'll actually ruin the beer. It's a very specialized flavors that you get from those, and they are made to be used in small quantities, but they're very important to imparting these unique flavors to the Belgian beers.
Right. And so the next big component, of course, in the beers is the hops. And as we mentioned earlier, as we were tasting some of these beers, we talked about how the hops were not forward in these Belgian styles of beer. And, you know, that's a characteristic that's unique to these. It's a never harsh hop presence in these Belgian beers with very low alpha acids, and the alpha acids in the hops is what drives that bitter flavor. And they use what they call noble hops, which are typically European style hops. There's a number of names like Saaz and Tettnanger, Hallertauer. It sounds German, right? But These are the kinds of hops that are grown in Europe. As compared to here in the U.S., we tend to focus a lot on the Cascades and the Centennials and hops of that nature. So they're very hop forward, but the European hops are used to bring a much milder flavor.
These styles of hops are background hops. They're not made to be the star of the show. They're just background. Right. They're the background singers.
Some of the European beers probably do use, you know, the Cascades and the Centennials, but probably not in very high amounts. You know, they just want to capture maybe a small essence of those. Now, I have a little experience in homebrewing a couple of batches of Belgian ale, and one of the interesting ingredients that I recall using is candy sugar or an adjunct sugar. And you can use these sugars to boost the alcohol by volume, or the ABV that we call it, and it also helps maintain light body and complexity. So I called it candy sugar. That can come in many forms. You have syrup. You can have soft sugar. For example, like a brown sugar is a soft sugar. It tends to melt. You know, if you hold it in your hand, it'll tend to crumble. And then, you know, there can be rock candy sugar. And there can be different colors of sugar. You can have very light colors all the way up to very dark. And it just, these sugars give a whole lot of different candy flavors to the beers. I just made, 2 weekends ago, a East Coast style IPA in which we used a raw sugar in the secondary fermentation tank. In 5-gallon batch, we put 2 pounds of what's called turbinado sugar, which is really just a raw cane sugar, and it's very coarse and brownish colored. And that, you can use honey, you can use table sugar. All of these different types of sugars are able to, you know, be an adjunct and help drive the alcohol level in these beers. I think you may find, as you tasted some of these beers tonight, you got, if you could think about it and think of the candy sugar, you can probably remember tasting it tonight. Now, here's probably another big one here in the major components is the yeast, of course. And the Belgian yeast strains are very famous and well-known. They're very unique and give you a lot of very unique characteristics. They're very aromatic. They contribute highly to the flavors of the beer. And we've already mentioned so many of the adjectives and the descriptives of these beers tonight. Things like flavors of clove and phenolics and, you know, fruit flavors and the dark fruits and spices and everything, you know, right up to bananas and bubblegum. I know that we characterize some of these tonight with having some of those flavors. So depending upon the strain of the yeast, you're going to impart some of these different characteristic flavors. Now, these yeasts are very tolerant of higher alcohol levels, and they attenuate well, which means they, you know, like I said, they're tolerant of the alcohol levels, and they generate a lot of esters, as you heard Doug talking about some of these beers, some of the aromas and the alcohol flavors that hit on your tongue. And a lot of these beers we mentioned tonight, they're bottle conditioned right in the bottle. They're still fermenting within the bottle. They're unfiltered and there's yeast in there. And as it ages over time, that yeast is still working on converting the sugars to alcohol and carbon dioxide. And so the pressure is building up in there. And as you pull the cork, you get that beautiful pop sound.
Uncle Pete bringing the science.
Oh, yeah.
And don't forget that the sediment goes to the bottom of the bottle. So when you're drinking a Belgian beer, you probably want to leave like the last half inch, quarter of inch in the bottle.
Right. It's not
unless
something
you want to get that vitamin B12, like Doug said.
But you're leaving a man behind when you
leave
that.
You know what? I have to be honest with you.
A little bit behind.
What I will do is I will drink the bottle.
I'll drink it.
I'll save the yeast till the end. And then when it's all gone and I have like nothing left in my glass, I'm like, screw it. I'm drinking the yeast. And it tastes a little different.
The yeast chaser.
No man left behind.
That's it. It's good for you.
So, you want to pour these, typically you want to pour them gently if you want to look at the colors without all of the haziness. I mean, it's your preference. It doesn't matter. I mean, if you got
no right or wrong,
if you got a shook up bottle of Belgian beer, no big deal. It's going to taste great. It's just your matter of preference, but there's no harm in it and, it's all good. So most of these, Belgians that we've had, well, I'd say half of them tonight were all corked in a cage, caged with the wire cage over the cork. So
a lot of ornate packaging.
Yes, and as Doug mentioned, the labeling and the bottling, they're different bottles than we see here in the States. They're usually a heavier gauge or thickness, and a lot of them have things imprinted right in the glass. So a little bit different than we're used to around here.
All right, well, we're about ready to start thinking about our beers of the week, guys, so start thinking about that. But before we do that, I wanted to name, actually, the Trappist beers in the world. There are 6 Belgian Trappist beers in the world, and there are 10 total, I believe. So I wanted to announce that the Trappist beers in the world in Belgium are Chimay, Orval, Roquefort, West Molly, West Vetteren, Akkel, Koningshoven, also marketed as Le Trapp, which we've had tonight. Koningshoven means King's Heaven. And in the country of Holland, in the Netherlands, we have Stift Engelsaal. Actually, I'm wrong. Koningshoven is in Holland. Stift Engelsaal is in Austria. St. Joseph's Abbey in Spencer, Massachusetts is in the United States and is also designated a Trappist ale. And in 2013, Abdij Maria Tovlucht was designated as a Trappist brewery. So
those are the names.
It used to be all a Belgian thing, and now it's kind of creeping around the world. But, I mean, they're very strict
would you say those are
that must be adhered to be a Trappist designation.
Did you say those are 6 whales?
I would say that each of those probably has a whale, but we have the whale of all whales tonight.
Oh, whoa. Well, really?
Thanks to Uncle Pete. He brought one of the whales of all whales.
Oh, the Westy 12.
The Ooh, West Vetteren 12. One of the most coveted and hard to get beers in the world.
Is there a back alley deal involved in getting this beer?
There was some dealing going on. Yes, we have a gentleman that we're.
Did you meet someone at a dock?
Yeah,
at like 4 in the morning.
Back you know alley.
Let's just say it wasn't in the police department parking lot.
A little bit about our whale of the week. Let's bust it out first of all. So Dugout's going to open it for us. I'm trusting you guys to leave me some because I'm going to be last in the order here. I know you take care of it.
I don't know, man. It's a small bottle.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
West Vetteren 12 is often proclaimed the best beer in the world by beer experts and publications.
Whoa. We're bringing, in it podcast might, number 6, we're bringing best beer in the world.
Many
we're bringing
heat here. Experts have named this the best beer in the world.
Beer Michael Advocate Jackson gives it a 100 out of 100.
Is this going to ruin every Jackson other beer I drink from here on out?
I hope not, but it's good.
There's no label. That's how awesome this beer is. It's like, I don't need a label.
It's printed right on the glass.
That's what I was saying. We emboss it into the glass.
It's on the glass and on the cap. But what we want to say about this beer is it can only be obtained in one place in the world, at the brewery in St. Sixtus Brewery in West Vetteren.
You got overseas connections, don't you, Uncle Pete?
Yeah, it's a long boat ride.
It's brewed in very limited quantities. I think the entire brewery makes like 40,000 cases of beer in a year.
Somebody's like, it's the best beer in the world. I don't want to drink it.
They make three types. They make three types of beer. So 40,000 cases, and not all of it's this. So it's extremely hard to get. It sells for around $2 a bottle at the brewery and up to 50 on the black market. And I know Uncle Pete paid $20 a bottle. I actually cashed in on that same opportunity because we know the same people.
That's right.
You know, black market things are black market things as we go no further.
But it all went to a good cause.
I can only tell you everything Belgian guy was all legal. Trench coat
and a hat.
And I got to say, it all went to a great cause, right? I mean, we talked earlier about the history of Belgian beers and the Trappist monks and how they have to, you know, support themselves and then donate any extra income from the beer to charities.
And that's absolutely true. Yes. The only problem I have is out of my $20, only two of that went to the Abbey. But we have it, and we can drink it here now and taste it. And
my conscience is going to be
clear. Share the
gospel. My conscience is
so
clear.
So if you're going to go to Belgium and you want to buy this, you know, you think, oh, well, I can go to the brewery. And
bring us some back, please.
Well, yes. It's not that simple because about 10 years ago, Rate Beer rated this the number one beer in the world.
I wish I could brush my teeth with it.
And the demand for the beer skyrocketed. As a result, there's now a one case per car limit. And to buy their beer, you must reserve a reservation over a phone hotline, and you must call at least 60 days in advance of your visit.
How many calls do they get
the call
every hour?
The hotline gets 85,000 calls an hour at peak times.
An hour?
Yes.
Yep. The brewery is, in addition, the brewery is like in bumfuck Egypt. It's,
it's
an hour and
a
half car drive from Brussels over barely paved country roads. They're like half the roads are dirt roads. And if you take a bus there, or you take public transportation and you switch buses to get there, it's a 9-hour excursion.
Do you have to know a foreign language to get to this brewery?
So, I mean, yeah, it's not good. So, the flavor profile of the beer, though, however, is phenomenal. It's exactly what I've told all of you guys all night. Dark fruit, raisins, oak, complexity. It warms you. It's 11% alcohol. I mean, there's a reason it's the best beer in the world. Because it's the best beer in the world.
It's magical.
So,
it's laughing at me.
You would think
brush
that,
my teeth
wow.
I want to put my dick
what
in
a great
it.
Thing. Everybody wants this beer.
I wish it were winter.
We're going to
make it into ice blocks and skate on it. And then
5 zillion cases and sell it everywhere because everybody wants it. Well, what did Doug tell you about the monks? They just want to make a little bit of money they want to take care of their expenses. And they want to donate some money to charity. That's all they do. And despite the demand, monks are monks first, and they only make what they need to support the Abbey for their longstanding traditions and beliefs.
Greedy bastards.
Beer
is complicated. Their lives are
they
simple.
Sell to live. They don't live to sell. So they will not make tons of this beer just to make a buck.
Come on, monks.
Recently, though, to fund their
stop holding out.
To fund the brewery of the renovation of the brewery because it needed an upgrade, they actually sent some Westy 12 to the United States for the first time a few years ago. And you guys might remember it was all in the news. I think it was only available in like a couple markets, and New York got tons of it because they have ungodly amounts of money. And they only sold enough to fund the renovation, and they shut it down and kept it exclusive. It's not that they're trying to be like hard to get. It's just that their mission is to support what they do and help the needy. So.
On that note,
are we just about finished? Wrap it up.
It's about that time, gentlemen.
Well, we have a decision to make here.
Beers of the week coming up. And remember, the whale of the week is not a
does not
acceptable.
Count.
Yeah, the whale of the week is it's
its own.
It's already been a beer of the something. It's a whale of the week.
So Westy 12, as good as it is, can't be your beer of the week. So Uncle Pete, start with you. What's your beer of the week?
I'm going to vote for the. You know, I like that double that he had, the La Trappe.
Okay.
And the reason I like the La Trappe double was it was a darker, more copper amber color with a full malt backbone to it. Very mild on the hops. Very nice spiciness in there. You know, with a little bit of banana on the yeast. So I thought it was perfect. As much as I love all the higher gravity beers and the triples and that, and the dark strongs, I'm going to stick with a basic double and go with the La Trappe.
Very well. Doug?
Now, not that I'm a bandwagon jumper here, but I have to agree with Pete that that was my strongest beer of all the ones we had, was the La Trappe. It had perfect balance. Had a very earthy character. It think I made the comment about it was meant to have a steak with it. I just wanted a big, giant ribeye to go alongside that big beer. It was that beautiful.
Very well. Chris?
Well, we're getting into the realm of unanimous here, because this one right here is my favorite one. The one in the big old bottle. La Trappe.
Grand.
The double.
Yep.
This is the one I prefer. If I got to get saddled, like I said, I don't mean to be derogatory, but if I got to get saddled with a bottle, I would much rather it be this bottle.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to buck tradition here.
Oh, there he goes again.
The Trappist Roquefort number 8 is by far my favorite.
So you like...
It's a dark, strong ale. I like it more than the Trappe was very good, the double, but I really like the 8 better. So it just had more complexity, and if I could be trapped on a desert island with 48 hours to live, I'd rather have a case of that than a case of the other one.
That's what it's all about, right?
But that being said, the brewery of the week is La Trappe.
La Trappe.
Trappist.
Oh, La Trappe.
So La Trappe is our brewery of the week, and La Trappe double. Trappist Ale is our beer of the week. So that about wraps it up for our trip through Belgium. Anybody have any last-minute comments?
Yes.
Yes, I do. Would you mind? I'd like to add a little story.
Please do.
Just a small story. I was reading in the news recently about this small town in Belgium called, I think it's Bruges. And the brewery, this is small towns in Belgium, if you can imagine, you know, very narrow streets and tight, right, and cobblestones and all that kind of stuff.
Is there a red light district
there? I'm sure there
is. Oh, that's what I'm imagining.
Well, anyway... It's you know, truck traffic there to move goods around is like clogging up the whole city, right? And so the brewery there, the Belgian brewery that they have there, they have their bottling plant across town. So the brewery's over here, and then miles away or kilometers away, whatever, you got the bottling plant. And so all this truck traffic with the beer is plugging everything up. So what do? They're building a pipeline underground to go from the brewery to the bottling plant. And the
in Belgium.
So here's the residents of this town are like, oh, yeah, how are we going to tap into this pipeline?
Yeah, that's the first thing I would think of is how can I pound into the ground and get some beer to come up into my house?
But this pipeline that's going in is going to move 6,000 liters of beer per hour. And they're doing all these environmental studies, you know, on the impacts of what if there's a spill. You know, I can imagine the crowd that's going to form when there's a spill. Yeah, everybody bring a mug. So I just wanted to offer that up.
That's like a water main you're praying to break. Like, come on, man.
That's good.
Let this one break. You have a beer fountain in the center of town.
How cool of a city is that,
though? I know, right?
I'd move there just on the chance that the pipeline will break.
As someone who in my day job deals with inspectors in municipalities all the time, that's definitely a laid-back municipality. They're letting an alcohol pipeline go in.
So this thing is supposed to reduce, like, you know, 500 trucks, you know, a day or whatever.
Well, if you're a truck driver, you're bummed out.
Yeah, that's got to be kind of crummy.
Well, I guess you better go into the plumbing business then.
Yeah, exactly. Be a truck driver and a plumber. Okay, well, thank you everybody who has downloaded, who has listened, who has liked, who has shared, who has told somebody about this podcast. People like craft beer, and this podcast proves it. I see the numbers every day, so thank you to everybody. We're going to be getting, by next podcast, we will have an actual Twitter address for you for Beer Nuts. We're going to set up a show account, probably a Facebook page, unfortunately an Instagram, but Instagram passed up Twitter a couple weeks ago with the number of users, so it's kind of one of those things where hand is forced. But you know what? If it means that that's any way anyone can find out about this show, then so be it. Make sure to tweet at Michigan Beer Guy or Michigan Beer Guy.
Please
go to MichiganBeerGuy.com. That is where the blog originates from. And thank you everybody who listens.
And you know, if you want to win something, just log on and MichiganBeerGuy.com and hit win that glass. And we got some really nice glasses.
Free things are good.
And you know what? It might just be a glass. There might be something else that may or may not be legal to send in your package. So, you know, walk on the wild side, man. Tweet us out.
Oh.
At Michigan Beer.
Those rogue tweets.
Yeah, what he said.
Yeah. All right. So I believe, sir, you have the sign-off.
As they say in old Mexico City, AMF.
AMF.
AMF. AMF.
If you enjoy this show and want more people to know about it, head on over to iTunes, leave a comment, and rate it 5 stars. Make sure you like and share us on Facebook, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Just search for Christopher Media. Thank you in advance for supporting Christopher Media by clicking on the PayPal button and by clicking through to all the sponsors who support ChristopherMedia.net. Most importantly, we would like to take the time to extend an extra special thanks to you. Christopher Media could not exist without your support. Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net, and thank you for listening. Christopher Media. Let's make some noise. Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net.